Do you go by Theodore? Or would you like us to address you as Bad Tuner?
You can say Theo is fine.
We were wondering before we logged on. I was like, wait a second. I actually don't know Bad Tuner's real name.
Yes.
people always say my name wrong. Like, I feel like 50% of the time it's Bad Turner. So I'm happy, I'm happy that you got the tuner right. That's a great starting point. 24 hours, the world could be ours. I'm 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 24.
Hello and introducing listeners, welcome back. Today we've got another and introducing, also interviewing episode. We've been talking to musicians about the musician lifestyle. In case you missed it, you might have caught our past episodes with people like Dan Beckner, A Beacon School, 95 Bulls. Today we are talking to Bad Tuner. Bad Tuner is an electronic musician in Brooklyn. We first caught wind of Bad Tuner when his song 24 Hours, which you are hearing in the background right now, dropped. It truly had us hooting and hollering and losing our shit. So we thought it would be fun to talk to Bad Tuner about his musical creation process, the current dance music scene in New York, etiquette in the club, using the samples nobody else is sampling, and much, much more. So stay tuned for Bad Tuner, and I'm sorry about that pun. I'm really sorry.
Hi, and welcome to And Introducing, a podcast about words. About music. I'm Chris Wade.
I'm Molly O'Brien.
And introducing on the ones and twos, producer, DJ, it's Bad Tuner, aka Theo. Welcome to the pod.
What's up, guys? Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you for joining us. Are you in Brooklyn?
I am. Yeah, I'm in Bed-Stuy right now.
Ooh.
It's a gnarly, gray, rainy, overcast day here today. So.
This is the part of, although I heard New York this past weekend got one of those like first springy days that
false
made
spring.
Everyone go completely nuts. Like we lived in New York for a long time and we just moved to LA, and like that's what I think I missed the most is that collective insanity of weather.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's kind of why I couldn't move to LA. It's so nice all the time.
It's a psychosis of
its own.
It
starts giving you unreality issues in its own way.
Yeah.
So Theo, you came on our radar with your recent single, 24 Hours, which I think is just a crackerjack tune.
So good.
It really, like, from the second, like, our friend of the show, Matthew, like, as soon as he was the first one to hear, Matthew Perpetua was the first one to hear it, and he was like, get this song to Chris and Molly. but, you know, you've been producing for a while, and your tracks seem to have, like, a wide variety of kind of styles and things that you're going for. Where did 24 Hours come from? How did you start putting this track together? Are you setting out to like hit a genre or style when you start building a track like this, or do you just kind of like start playing around and see where it goes?
For that one in particular, I would say that was really a see how it goes moment. And I think afterwards, the inspirations kind of started to like solidify in my head. I don't think I went out being like, I want to write a like big beat tune. I don't think that was ever the intention. I don't think people have thought about writing big beat tunes for like 20 years.
Well, I'm glad you are, because
more.
I honestly one of the reasons that this came back is like just last, like, or why this hit so hard for us is like just last fall, like we were all being like, you know what rocked? Like Prodigy. Why isn't anybody doing stuff like that anymore? And then this your song dropped and we were like, oh, great. Finally, somebody's bringing big beat back.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I think for me, it was, I mean, it kind of came from the process of just writing that song. It was just so sample driven that that entire genre is just all about break beat drums and then either guitars and like acid synths and kind of abrasive sounds. And psychedelic, and I think that original sample of that song, which I need to, it's Funky Monkey is the name of the group that the sample was like drawn from, and then I think once I had that original, that was just kind of the main like guitar hook not the vocal, just the guitar part. And that basically led the rest of the production. I had started using a new website I never used before to dig on samples called Tracklib, which allows you to kind of royalty, not royalty free, but like have pre-cleared licenses. So artists or labels had, you know, upload stuff that you can use without having to go through the process of clearing stuff, which can be a super big headache.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
That's cool. Had you heard of that before?
I had not. Yeah. I would be interested in poking around there. I mean, I'm not a producer of music in any sense, but I would be interested in I'm always interested in any new database. For like, for royalty-free cleared samples and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a cool model because I think the sample ecosystem for electronic music is, it starts to, a lot of it starts to sound the same.
Yeah.
Because people, the one thing I've realized is that like, if you go to these sampling websites, they have like it sorts it by popularity. So people are choosing by default the same samples over and over, and they may not even know it's being sorted by popularity. So this website, it's actually just using original songs rather than, you know, samples that people have written to be samples. It's original music. So it has a little bit more of the create digging feel, and you can kind of find stuff that's a little bit more obscure from different parts of a song.
That's interesting because, and I've not really fully considered the sample ecosystem of electronic music, but in just thinking about this in the moment now, it's like I'm imagining that as electronic music got kind of more codified and formalized, like in the 80s, 90s, you know, it's all like pirate stuff. You're just pulling whatever you want, and everybody's like a bedroom producer, and then somehow some people get big and you have to figure backfill how to clear the samples and stuff like that. But as things have gotten like more formalized and the genre has become like more popular, and there's are like they're like tracks to do, not tracks like music tracks, but you know, like professional tracks to do these things, there need to be like ways that people can find these things and use them in a semi-professional way, even if you're just starting out.
Totally. And some of the biggest like electronic artists or up and coming electronic artists of the last year, I'm finding they're using the same, I'm like hearing the same samples across different tracks. So it's interesting. I think Tracklib is a cool resource and others like it, where you can kind of, you know, make a little bit more interesting sounding music because it's not the same banks that you're pulling from all the time.
Yeah. Have you always done sample based music, or is this like on the newer end of stuff?
I think I've always used some, whether it's a breakbeat drum or some kind of, you know, vocal hit. I've always used this as some kind of capacity. I would say 24 Hours in particular would be one of my more sample-based songs. I think a lot of my music, I do use original vocals and work with a vocalist or work with you know, someone that I know that have sent over something in the past. I'm kind of digging through my iTunes library to find an acapella, but that one in particular would be more sample driven.
Have you played it out and about yet? And what is the response to it?
I think it's a super fun track to play out. It's a hard song to transition in and out of. Because the ending, I didn't really, going into the writing of the song, I really think about that. I really think about, you know, the prop, like how it's going to flow within an actual DJ set from like a logistical standpoint. But I think it starts like, it starts super strong, and I really loved how it like had that kind of like that horn intro.
The horn is really, it's always really exciting when it hits, and when it breaks in the middle of the song, you get it back again.
So that it's kind of a moment in a DJ set where I let the prior song kind of just finish, and then I just throw that one in there.
Because
it's not gonna be a smooth flow.
Be a problem to those in power.
You're a producer and a DJ. It seems like most producers are DJs and vice versa. What did you start off with? Did you start off DJing and then get into producing, or were they two skills that you like grew at the same time? And how do they inform each other for you?
I definitely started as a DJ before a producer. I started in high school doing like bar mitzvahs. Nice. So
sick.
Yeah, that is that was kind of how I got into that whole world. But I would say, like during college and afterwards, I found that, writing my own music was not more fulfilling, but it's a totally different, you know, it's a totally different artistic experience mm-hmm. to write your own music and then play it versus just playing out other music that you enjoy. And I think they both have their own merits and there's places for both of them. But I think if you're going to be playing music out, you might as well play some of your own music.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I need to know more about the bar mitzvah cycle, sort of circuit rather. do you remember your first one that you DJed you know, lessons learned along the way, perhaps?
I would say for that is just about being silly and having a good time. That's still what you do. You know, don't take it too seriously. Have a good time. And I think, I was in high school then. So it was definitely, it was a different mentality about music and the kind of stuff you'd be playing would be very, very much, you know, right down the center songs that everyone would know. And and I think it's still important every once in a while to put in a song in your set that people know to bring them back into it. But I would say my perspective's changed a little bit in terms of my sets.
Yeah. I mean, well, so when you're like DJing out as Bad Tuner, are you thinking the idea is like, I want people to understand what my original music is like through how I DJ other people's music?
I think that's exactly it. Yeah. Like I kind of, my sets, for the most part, depending on how long they are, they range from, you know, 45 minutes to 2.5 to 3 hours, depending on what the gig is. And if it's a shorter gig, I'll try to play almost all my own music.
Mm-hmm.
It's so short that my catalog is big enough that I feel comfortable doing that. If I'm playing like a longer set, like 2.5 or 3 hours, I'll be playing music that inspires me or music that, you know, that I'm currently like just really, you know, loving the reaction to, like from the crowd. And then also music that, like demos that I'm still testing out.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of the DJ set itself, I try to contextualize, like I'll play a lot of older stuff that I just really dig. And I think that's the main point of being a DJ, just spreading kind of what your taste is and then giving it some context.
Yeah, I mean, I've been teaching myself to DJ in a very amateurish way, and I don't know, I haven't done that many live shows yet, but it is like when I imagine performing live, I kind of get caught up in my head of being like, oh, I need to make sure that everything I'm doing is like really cool and like like demonstrating how good my taste is, versus then when I'm actually like in the flow, I end up feeling, no, you know what? I just play the song because it's good and I like it. I don't have to, like, I'm not impressing anybody. But it is like, it's funny thing going into DJing as like a performance of that. At least the central thing is, does it rock? Is it good? Are other people having a good time versus like the performance of, here is what Bad Tuner is, or here is what Chris Wade is as like a musical entity, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's a lot easier when you have your own music to put in there, because it kind of speaks for itself.
Right.
And I think when you start playing songs of other musicians that you dig or throwbacks that you feel like fit the world that you're trying to live in, it's only like further aligning who you are as an artist or who you feel like you want to be in that circle of. So, yeah, I think. A DJ set can be like, I guess, both of those things, like both a like a personal statement as well as just music you dig.
Yeah.
Can I ask, you know, in terms of the songs that you maybe still throw in that you know everyone likes or kind of like a guaranteed like crowd pleaser, what kind of songs are you pulling these days? I'm always curious about, you know, what are the old reliables?
Yeah, the guaranteed bangers.
Yes. Yeah.
For sure. Let me pull up my iTunes, my recent set playlists. Nah. But I love a place like, obviously, some like Groove Armada and some like Fatboy Slim tracks, Daft Punk, Royksopp. I don't even know if I pronounced it right. rock.
That's how I say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a classic band that I've almost only ever seen written.
Yeah. So I'm sure it has some obscure, like, Scandinavian actual pronunciation, but Royksopp sounds about right to me.
And everywhere I go, there's always something to remind me of another place. In time, well, love that traveled far and found me. We stayed outside till two.
Yeah, so kind of those would be like some older tracks that maybe I'm not playing the greatest hits of those artists, but there's is always people in the crowd that recognize it, and you kind of point, you can kind of see that, you see a smile come across their face being like, oh wow, that's cool. He's, you know, he's playing a throwback song by this artist that I really like. Yeah. So.
So you DJ mostly in Brooklyn?
Yeah, mostly I play around here, around the city, and ideally starting to do some more touring around the country and whatnot.
Nice. So how would you describe like the mood, the club mood right now? Like, is there an expectation of like a certain kind of contemporary style? You know, like last year, you know, we've seen that drum and bass has been super hot, and like basically all electronic stuff that got filtered up into the pop sphere, the top 40 sphere, was basically some kind of drum and bass
or garage or
reinversion
garage.
And then there's also, of course, like as we were leaving Brooklyn, you know, it seemed like the hyper pop type thing was also like an overall style. Is there like an expectation that depending where you go out, that you're conforming to these like popular styles, or are there specific rooms that you like to go to that let you do what you want? What's the vibe?
Over the last 2 years ago, everything's definitely gotten way faster. Mm-hmm. There's a real trend for this like speed garage, speed house thing where the BPMs are really fast.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a TikTok thing. I don't know if that's a Spotify algorithm thing. I'm not sure what is driving that, but producers, like some of my favorite producers are all writing music now in that lane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like 135 BPM to 140 something. It's just really fast stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that there are maybe certain venues where, like, you know, people going out are kind of expecting that mood, but I think there are also venues where like that's not the vibe, and it's they're, you know, DJs are playing more classic house. And I think it really depends on what, if there's a specific party you're going to. I'm not like the biggest clubber myself. Like I do play and I do appreciate like the DJs in New York, but I'm not going out like 3 days a week to the clubs in Brooklyn.
You're not a club rat, as they say.
No, I'm not a club rat, but I do think that in New York, especially if you're an artist in your own right, I think people, when they go out to see you, I think people are pretty open to letting you play the kind of music that you're going to play, and there's not usually a backlash on it. I don't think I've ever had the experience where I'm either out at a club and the DJ was playing something and people weren't vibing, or like, I just feel like people are pretty receptive overall to different types and pretty open. So
I've found that usually in the places that we went out is like, you know, as long as you like read the show description and had some kind of awareness. It was only ever that one time that we went to, where was that?
Bossa Nova.
And they were playing like hard techno where it was really just,
I think it was hard style
where it was all like, we were like, all right, we're gonna go out dancing. You walk into Bossa Nova and all you can hear for like the hour that we were there was just
like no melody. Yeah. I don't, it was like hard style. I've never heard anything like it.
People were getting down to it. And at a certain point I had to be like, okay,
two people were getting down to it.
I was like, you know what, this is not my thing. I'm happy for them, but not me. It's not for me tonight.
For sure. But it's great that these kind of types of music, even music that we're not getting down with per se, like, or it still exists, because having the space for these different scenes is what allows the scene to thrive in itself. If it was all the same, it would be actually pretty boring, I think.
Yeah.
True. I see you're playing elsewhere next month.
I am. Yeah, I'm doing a. I'm kind of doing a tour actually.
Ooh,
nice.
Yep. So I will be out in LA. So I'll see you guys out there.
Where are you playing in LA?
That's TBD.
I love a good TBD TBA.
Yeah, I'm stoked. I've been playing elsewhere for pretty much as long as they've been open. I've probably played there like 8 times over the last year, like, you know, twice or 3 times every year.
Mm-hmm.
And each time I feel, whether it's a support slot or a headline of my own, it's, they have so many rooms there that I just feel like I keep graduating to the next step there.
Yeah.
So what are you in zone two, I'm gonna guess?
It's kind of weird. Zone 1 is the smaller room, and then the hall is the bigger
room.
And then, yeah, so I'm in the hall.
Hell yeah. Nice.
Elsewhere's a great space.
It is, and the team there is super super accommodating and supportive of the scene in New York.
Yeah.
So, although they've spelled my name wrong too. So.
Damn.
Add them to the list.
it's hard out there.
I also love the in-house elsewhere poster design. I love how it's immediately like you glance. When you toss it in the Instagram story and immediately like, ah, yeah, that's an elsewhere show.
Yeah, the brand is strong, as they say.
I feel like a lot of the coolest venues in New York all have that. I feel like Public Records does a great job of that, and so does Good Room as well.
Yeah.
I feel I think it's a really important thing for venues to put, you know, like put energy and time into their branding. Cause like you said, like when, as soon as you see it, you know what's going on, and elsewhere is one of those places that do a good job on that.
So what are your favorite rooms? You just mentioned Good Room, Public Records. We used to live right around the corner of Public Records, the Sound Room, of course.
The Sound Room.
Yeah. Good. I mean, both those rooms I think are kind of legendary in New York in their own ways. Public Records obviously is very trendy, but it is a really nice sounding room. Like those speakers, like they slam.
It's like beautiful in there because everything's like made of this like custom wood casing. It really does feel like you are going into all concert halls are designed for music, but it really feels like you're stepping inside a vintage speaker.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like you're in like a piece of like custom furniture or something.
Yeah, I love going there. I've never played there, but I think that's definitely a goal of mine to play there. I love Nowadays. I love their, you know, Mr. Sundays during the summer and their outdoor stage.
Mm-hmm.
There's this new spot, Gabriella, or that just opened up in the old, I think it's the old Kinfolk space.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Which I haven't been there yet, but I've heard great things that they're throwing an awesome Thursday night party.
When you go into any of these places, are you kind of like, are you feeling out what you're going to be playing by the mood of the room? Or are you kind of like, how much planning do you put into your sets beforehand? Do you kind of just like have like, oh, I want to do like, you know, these 10 songs and I'll probably put some other stuff. Or do you just like open your files and just start going and see where it takes you?
So I actually plan it out pretty carefully. I take a fair amount of time before a gig to kind of feel what songs I want to play. That's the number one thing I'll do is I'll make a overall playlist. Like I have these demos that I've been working on that I really think that I want to see how they feel. And then I have these songs that I just put out. So I want to promote those. And then I have, you know, these records that either I've seen someone on Boiler Room play this set and these songs went off and they're great tracks, or this is an old song that I just reheard for the first time in 10 years and I love it and I want to play this one. So I'll kind of make this overall list. And then from there, I will say, okay, so my set is an hour and a half. I'm going to see how many songs I can fit into that timeline. So I'll divide it. I'd say like I usually divide it by 3,
mm-hmm.
Because I know I'm going to have a little bit of time. Like it's usually a 4-minute song, but I'm going to probably lose a minute within the transition. So I'll figure out how many songs I have. And then from there, I'll bring it into a software that kind of tells me what key everything is in.
Yeah.
Mixing key.
Yeah, it's, I guess I use Serato just to organize my stuff, but I think they might. I don't know if they own Mixing Key. They somehow use the same system. So and I find what songs kind of, and then I'll actually practice all those transitions and see if, because even if it says it's in the same key, I kind of want to make sure that it's actually feels like it's right.
Yeah.
So I'll practice all those moments, and I'll build the set list back out, and then I'll bring it to the gig.
It's good to be prepared, yes. I find.
It is.
Hello, it's Molly from The Edit. Yeah, we recorded this, I think, maybe a couple weeks before the great Grimes Coachella Weekend 1 Sahara Tent DJ set debacle.
This is a difficult thing to explain, but we're having a major technical error where all the song tempos are double speed, and I've not practiced the math because I'm not fast at math.
In which Ms. Grimes, you know, apparently outsourced her file management to some unnamed bungling party and completely, as they say in the DJ community, train wrecked up there. Oddly enough, I feel like this Grimes Coachella set was actually maybe a real watershed moment in regular humans understanding what even happens on stage as a DJ. So glad you're in the middle of this conversation with Bad Tuner, where we're getting the inside scoop.
It's very reassuring to hear from a professional DJ, because, like, yeah, as I said earlier, I was teaching myself how to DJ over pandemic, and then when my other podcast went back out on the road touring, I was like, my little challenge to myself was like, oh, I'm going to DJ the pre-show. But because I was so nervous and so amateur about it, I was also going through and being like, okay, here's the exact thing that I want to say, and here's what, and I'm practicing the transitions, I'm doing this. It's all self-taught. And I have a feeling that most DJs, you're kind of like, you decide to do it and you just like go off on your own and maybe watch some YouTube videos and like figure it out. So I was feeling a little like I was doing it with training wheels, that I was planning it out so much. But so it's nice to hear that you know,
gotta have
at all
wheels.
Levels that it's, people prepare that much.
Totally. And I think it's also the kind of thing where that being prepared like that gives you the flexibility to go out and then come back to your set list. Like, you know, play a bunch of songs that you weren't planning to, and then you're like, okay, now I can pick it back up to where these songs I know, yes, all kind of fit together. Because I've had times where I'm not prepared, and it's just stressful for me.
Yeah.
It's I'm just thinking like the whole time in between songs what I'm gonna play next, and I can obviously wing it and have fun and go back to back with people, and but it doesn't, it's less of a performance in that way, and it's more of a DJ set mentality, and that's totally fine. It's just a different way of going about it.
Speaking of, you know, living in the moment, how often do you get, to take it to the subject of crowd etiquette, how often do you get people holding up their cell phones with like a giant text on it that asks a request? Is that, are people leaving you alone, or are you getting people asking you to play like Drake in the club?
I'm not getting Drake in the club.
Good to hear. Good to hear.
I do get, every once in a while, I do get a cell phone held up, but it is, it's honestly hard to read those. It's just like right in your face.
I like the idea of being in the DJ booth and like putting your readers on and being like, what? Yeah, could you turn it up? Another reason it's funny to like start learning DJing is realizing when people make those kinds of requests that you simply are like, I don't have it.
I only have the songs I have.
I don't know what to tell you. This isn't Spotify.
Well, the thing is that Pioneer rolled out a whole way to just stream every, like, I think on their new CDJs, you can just type in any song and stream it on the spot. So we're that excuse is now no longer valid.
We can't let the people know.
Hey, I think, you know, like how in Berlin they make you put the stickers over your camera, so no cameras in the club. I think to combat that, there needs to be a new club policy that's no Wi-Fi in the club.
No Wi-Fi.
Club.
They have a new one that's, you can connect a fan. It's like, it's marketed as this. The fans can link into your device with Bluetooth and play their tracks off.
No.
Like, off their, it's like, it's just, it's brutal.
That's like whoever is in charge of that product development is clearly just not out there in the trenches.
Yeah.
Understanding how it could be used for evil.
These are like, it's like the AI people who are just like, we've got, just because we can doesn't, we never stop to ask if we should, you know?
Yeah. in crowd culture in general? Like anything that you've noticed that today's average, dance party attender is doing that you wish they would do less of, or something that you wish they would do more of?
That's a good question. What would they could do more of? I feel like as I've done a lot of opening slots.
Yeah.
And I think there are people that get there early. I think I am really excited that people get there early to come and support opening acts. That's so important. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's a different, and I guess it's just, I'm probably the same way. There's a different expectation of energy level and like engagement for the opening artist. For the most part, I've found that where people are just, they just don't want to use their energy up. They're just, kind of a little bit more low key, and that's to be expected. But that would be the only thing, is just like I found like opening for artists, artists that are bigger than me and playing in bigger rooms, like that is amazing opportunity to get in front of new people and to play rooms that I probably wouldn't be able to play by myself. But mm-hmm. it's also the kind of thing where maybe you're not really experiencing what the headliner is going to be experiencing. So I guess the thing. It's just like bring the energy for the opener, because they're also like giving it their all.
Yeah, and I imagine it can feel like, a bit like if you're up there and you're just looking at a big room full of people who aren't really moving, you're like, am I dying? Am I screwing this up? And then you like go get off afterwards, and everybody's like, no, that rocked. I was just waiting, not really moving until the headliner came on or whatever, And then it's hard to get the feedback that you want to even just like know the quality of what you're doing,
That's exactly it. And I think also the sound people typically keep your level a little lower, so that when the headliner goes up, it goes a little harder, which I guess is also part of it.
Is there, I feel like I've heard a little bit about this, about the kind of the politics of the volume. Is that, is there kind of like nothing you can really do about that? Like, do you see anyone like pushing back on that, of being like, please give me a little more sauce in the mix? Or is it kind of just like part of the paying your dues zone of opening for people, or playing on a stacked bill?
I think it's kind of, that's a good question. I think it's the kind of thing where, you're not in a band, so you can't turn your amp up really. You can't really, there's not much you can do. I've had up like some shows where I take my booth monitors, like the ones that are pointing towards me, and I'll point them out towards the crowd.
That's smart.
just to put a little afterburner on the volume.
Yeah. You kind of have to, because you're feeling like, I blast the booth monitors so loud, it's probably bad, but you have electronic music. You kind of really have to have it loud. Like, it's kind of part of the experience.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
I've downloaded songs, or like got songs that I've been like practicing with myself. I'm like, been like, this is kind of, I don't know, this is kind of mid. I can't really fit this one in. I don't know what to do with it. And then go out somewhere and hear the same song, and when it's blasting at you, you're like, no, this rips. I was just not playing it loud enough.
That's it. Yeah. That's what I keep telling myself about my music. Just turn it up.
Yeah. Is it tough? Because, I assume if you're in the production of just like doing it yourself and listening to headphones, and also if you're in New York, like it's maybe tough with neighbors or something to like actually play things loud. Is it, I guess this is the question. Is there anything between producing yourself, in your room with your headphones, and then like taking it out to like an official club? Like, is there any kind of like JV version of testing out your song, or are you just like letting it rip in your room and like hoping for the best?
I will let it definitely rip in my room. I don't know if my neighbors is very nice to me or my walls are really thick, but I have I've never had any noise complaints from my building, which is
maybe
awesome.
They like it. Maybe they like it.
For a while, I kept getting these Instagram ads for what were like DJ practice rooms in New York and LA.
I got those too.
Where you can just like go to a place where they've got decks in a soundproof room, and practice, which seemed like kind of compelling. But now I have a garage, so
I've definitely used those in the past, because professional DJ equipment is like prohibitively expensive.
Like the CDJ stuff.
Yeah, it's, you know, you're in it on a full, like on a rig that they have at a club, it's going to be, you know, $8,000 and something equivalent to that. So it's so hard for someone on the come up to ever afford something like that in their home. So you can rent out these rooms for like $30 an hour. You know, it's not bad at all. And, and get in there and practice using the equipment so you feel comfortable when you show up at the gig. And I've definitely done that before. And I think it's definitely a smart move if you have like a serious or, you know, an event coming up that you're using equipment you've never used before, or you just want to practice some, you know, practice using it. It's pretty cool.
So what do you have at home? What kind of controller are you rocking with?
I have like an old, I guess one of the earlier like Pioneer Serato controllers that you need the laptop with.
Yeah.
I don't really use it other than if I'm recording a DJ mix for like a radio station or a blog, or just to prep my sets. I won't like just be at home DJing. That's not really like how I spend my time.
You gotta have a good reason to do it.
Well,
do you do a lot of radio stuff?
Not a ton, but I feel like I used to do it a little bit more. But I do. I feel like around releases, that will definitely be like a focus, is doing like a mix with a partner around a release to help, you know, put the song and like I said before, give it some context.
So let's talk some process stuff, because now that I'm talking about gear, it brings me back to it. So like we started talking about, you know, you're finding the sample, you're using the sample site. What like programs do you use? How do you go about building up a track?
The process for me is ever changing, and I think that's kind of obvious in my music. I think my music definitely has a wide sound. It's all electronic, and I think it all has, you know, me in it, but I think my process has shifted. But I typically will start with finding some really good drums. That's like something that's really important to me. Just so I can, if I'm playing the keys at home, I'm not playing to a metronome, because I think that's really boring and uninspiring.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And you also will like, you won't be like changing chords on like a beat that is unanticipated. If you're playing to a metronome, you're kind of going to be playing pretty straight.
Mm-hmm.
I'll find, whether it's like on YouTube or on one of these sampling sites, or even just playing along to another song that I like the drums, I'll find some drums that at least like make me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And whether I use those in the final track or not, usually shifts. It depends, but yeah, I'll do that. And then I will typically play like the keys, like play some chords. I have a couple synths, and then
what synths? Tell me about the synths.
Chris, okay. Chris is a big synth head. Is there a word for you?
Yeah, synth head.
Synth head?
Yes.
Synth nerd is another one.
Yeah.
I got the Udo synth. I don't know if you know that one. It's been pretty popular over the last 2 years. It's like that blue one. You've probably seen it.
What's that? I'm going to pull this up while you're talking, but keep going.
The Udo Super 6, and I've been enjoying that one. It's like... it's a modern synth, but it does have some kind of like old school tones to it. And, that has been, and like, it's been fun. I've been enjoying using it both as like a playable like synth where I can just play chords on it, but also then running, if I record the MIDI information from it, like if I'm just playing it and then run the MIDI back into it, just being able to modulate, the different sounds and record the audio back into my computer.
So you can like run the MIDI lines out of your computer into the synth and then use the synth presets, toggles, knobs to actually like change the programming.
Exactly.
I assume that also means you can like change things slowly over time fairly easily, instead of having to go in and like program everything in the computer.
That's exactly it. Yep. Yeah. That's kind of how I've been using that synth. Cause before that, I mean, I also have an old like 80s Roland synth, and that is also great, but the MIDI I think was just a little janky on it.
Yeah,
there's some like lag and or dropouts, so it wasn't as good as a MIDI controller. So it's nice having something that I can get good audio and MIDI information out of.
And what program are you using on the computer?
I use Ableton mainly. Okay. Yeah, I think it's, I think they actually just announced the new Ableton today, or just released it, actually, the new Ableton. But yeah,
well, happy Ableton Day to those who celebrate.
Happy Ableton Day.
I think I saw someone talking about it on Twitter and saying that, like, it's actually, there's like a non-subscription version of Ableton that's like, I don't know, I'm sure you've seen this in your own work of just like everything is becoming a subscription now.
Yeah.
And anything that can, you can just buy at once is like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah. It's a rare thing these days.
Yeah. So yeah.
I like Ableton. It's good. It's, I don't think there's really much. I think all these different, like Logic and even Pro Tools or Cubase, they all kind of at this point are just feeding off of each other in terms of their features. So they're pretty much becoming very similar in their functionalities. Mm-hmm. I would say Ableton, it's just about the workflow for me. It just works and I'm used to it. Is that what you use as well? Or
I have used Ableton. I mean, again, I'm a super amateur on these things. So I mostly taught myself when I was programming things in like GarageBand. So like Logic makes more sense to me, but I got, I moved to PC a few years ago, and so I got an Ableton copy just to start playing around with it. And I'll be honest, I found it insanely confusing. Maybe I just haven't found the right YouTube tutorials.
That's possible. I think stick with what you like. If Logic works, just stick with what you know. The main difference is just going to be what you put into it, not necessarily like the software itself. It's just kind of a canvas, right?
Yeah. You just need to take your fear and put it into the box.
Well, as Chris wants to know about process, I need to know about your DJ fashion and style, because you've got some great, I'm sorry, I did a little swipe back on your Instagram and you have some great jackets.
Oh, thank you.
Where did the jackets come from? Is that a thrift store? Is that new and looks like old school? What are we working with here?
I have a mix of some of the stuff I have thrifted, and some of the stuff is courtesy of my stylist. So she,
That's a nice thing to have. I want a fucking stylist.
It's really nice to have that, to be honest. It's it's stuff that I'll use for whether it's like a video shoot or a photo shoot, and then I can't actually afford it. So
totally. So do you get some friendly like gifties, or is it kind of like, I got to hand it all back at the end of the day?
It depends. Some of the stuff I have to hand back, and then sometimes I'll either buy it, like I'll just be like, I like this a lot, I'm just gonna buy this.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man,
but yeah,
these are good jackets.
Now what I need to know more about the stylist, because I have trouble, you know. I wear this sweatshirt like every day. It's a problem. But what do you give any kind of like, you know, but buzzwords or kind of like mood board, or do they just come to you with like, here's this selection?
It is definitely like my DJ sets, where it's very planned out.
Okay.
Have a full mood board going, and we'll kind of, these outfits would be like put together for a release.
Yeah.
Or like a photo shoot around a release for, like, I've been using these photos like as EP or album artwork, so that's been kind of why I don't know, I would wear a hoodie in my like EP artwork, but I feel like just something a little more vibrant would help.
Yeah.
help get people to want to listen to it or something. Yeah. Like that. But yeah, I'll kind of put together a mood board of I'll use like Pinterest or some other kind of like, what, you know, just diving on YouTube or whatever it is to find some outfits I like and put them all together in a mood board, and then send that off to her, and she'll basically source stuff she can actually find or buy and send me over options, and I choose which ones I like, and then she'll order them, and then you show up to the photo shoot and she'll lay them all out, and amazing. Sometimes they fit and sometimes they don't.
Well, I dig the look. It's very, it's like late. I don't know. I feel like we're in some ways we're in like Y2K hell, but like, I'm like, can we take it back to like the late 90s? Like talk about, you know, Prodigy or Fatboy Slim or whatever. I'm like, late 90s is fresh to me. Why am I speaking like this?
Because that's what they said in the late 90s.
I guess so. Yeah. Anyway, I think it's a great look.
I mean, you mentioned it. Can we talk about the video for a second? The 24 hours video. I think it's, just like the song, a really great video. It is also feels like very classic
yet
music video. Yeah, but in like, but not, yeah, like retro or old. Can you tell us a little bit about how it came together, how you came up with the idea, who directed it, stuff like that?
Totally. Yeah, that was with my friend Patrick, who I've done loads of videos with at this point. He's a good friend of mine, and we shot it last February, so it's been shot for a long time, like, you know, about a year since.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so it has been in the can, and we shot it in 2 days. It was wicked cold days in New York, and we were just,
it looks like February in New York in those videos, but in a really like authentic way.
Yeah.
Grimy.
Yeah, it was very grimy and very cold, and I basically made an Instagram story to my fans, like on the close friends or whatever, being like, hey, I'm shooting a music video. If you're free, come to West Forest Station at this time. And then,
wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it was cool. It was like very, natural. It was like the people that came wanted to be there. No one was getting paid for it. It was kind of like a friends and fans kind of thing. And I didn't know who was showing up. I think I did send everyone a mood board as well.
Yeah. I was gonna say everyone looks like individual yet like part of a kind of general vibe.
Yeah, I mean we'll link to it, but it's essentially, just to give the listeners some context, is essentially very guerrilla shot on the New York City subway of a variety of different people, different types of people, all repeating the refrain of the song, like mouthing it over and over, quick cuts between. But it has a very like rhythmic and very like real New York-y energy.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Thank you. Yeah, we did shoot it on film as well, so we didn't
on we film. Nice.
Yeah,
because it has a very that real look
got
to
the grain.
It. Yeah,
yeah, it's definitely raw feeling. We shot on the Kragnegorst like 16mm, and I remember the director got the footage back, and like the guy was like, your camera is so broken. Like this footage just doesn't look right. And we were stressed, but we just kind of brightened it up and recolored it, and it looks great.
Fix it in post.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for a music video, the unique style of a broken camera is something
everyone
that you
wants
can't
their camera
recreate,
to look broken,
you know?
Now. Like that is the vibe.
The light leaks, the stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure.
People are tired of like 4K or people. Me, I am tired of 4K HD.
Too many Ks.
We should
have topped out at 2Ks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just shot another video where we did shoot it on like the red 4K route, and now we're just down. We're just trying to make it look as lo-fi, but we're just trying to make it feel more raw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, you can just shoot it raw, or you can just try to make it look raw. It's always going to look better it's just more expensive, I guess, shooting it on film. That's the main difference. But yeah, we shot it, and a lot of the faces you see in it are not fans or people that came from, they're just people that we asked in the subway, can you please get involved? And this is the line, and we had the speaker playing, and they would just line it up. And it was a very late night. It was a long shoot, but we got it, and it was really exciting. And there is a little bit of a narrative too. Like there's like a girl on it who has the megaphone going around. And
New York, man, people are down.
some people were down. Some people were just, you know, your classic, get out of here.
Fuck
what are you doing?
Yeah,
exactly.
Go fuck yourself. In mid pandemic, we spent a lot of time in Prospect Park, just like hanging out in the band shell. And we sometimes we would do karaoke. We would just like bring like a PA system and like do karaoke. And then we were there, it was probably like 10 at night or something in the summertime. And this group of people comes up and they're like, we are running around New York shooting a music video.
Oh God.
Can we come and use the band shell for a second as a location? And we were like, yeah, of course. They had a motorcycle and they used the light from the motorcycle to light the scene. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, it was great.
Like that's the real New York shit is just run and gun.
Real guerrilla filmmaking. I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I guess I would like to, unless Molly has any further questions, just wrap up by talking about like kind of the big picture, the project of Bad Tuner. You know, you got this new single, you're going on tour, like
new album or EP?
Yeah, are we prepping an album? Like, and then also like, what are the priorities? Are you want to be like, are you trying to just play more live? Do you want to, are you focusing on like streaming numbers? Are you trying to sell albums? I assume it's a little all of the above, but like, how are you thinking about like, what are the goals of the project? You know?
That's a good question. I would say for me, well, I guess to start at the top, it is an EP that's coming out. Mm-hmm. So it's six songs. And I guess two of them are out now, 24 hours and maybe so. And then the rest of the four, there'll be one more single between now and then the EP comes out on April 5th. And I guess from there, moving forward from that, once that's all out in the world, it's about playing it out and, you know, getting people to hear the music in a live setting. Cause that's where I think music really connects is, you know, with when you're surrounded by other people and they have that experience together is such a, you know, such a good way to gain a fan and to a fan to like, you know, to find their new artist they love. So
yeah.
That would be my next step is just getting on the road and playing. Right now I'm doing Chicago and Denver and San Francisco, New York, and LA.
Nice.
I think that's it right now, but I think there are some other dates that I'm still figuring out, but that will be kind of like to support the EP. That'll be my first headlining like national run. So it is exciting to visit these cities and play.
Will that be the first time you've played in some of those places?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I've never done Denver. I've never done San Francisco. I played Chicago, but that was a while ago. But that was also this was my first time, like doing it around like a body of work too, which is always special. Like having that kind of that moment of this is why you're on the road to support this body of work.
Thank you, Bad Tuner. Thank you, Theo. The Bad Tuner EP is indeed out right this second. It's called Look At Me But Through Me. You can find it wherever you can find music. We will make sure to link it in the liner notes, the show notes, the episode notes, whatever. Bad Tuner is also indeed midway through his headlining tour. He is currently going to be in Denver on April 27th, San Francisco on May 3rd, Los Angeles on June 6th. Perhaps you live in or near one of those cities. Go check them out. I think it's sure to be a rager. I think it's going to be a rager. Thank you so much for listening. We've got some new stuff cooking up in the works, so please hang in there with us. The usual suspects for how to get in touch, email andintroducingpod@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @andintropod. The SoundCloud is soundcloud.com/and-intro-pod. Slap a little Apple podcast review on us if you're feeling crazy. Yeah, thanks for listening. We will see you next time. Be a problem to those in power. Be a problem to those in power. Be a problem to those in power.